Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with Erica Dresick, who is part of the ensemble company performing in Mornings at 7, which will be opening on September 18th at the Manatee Community Theater in Bradenton, Florida. Although Erica discovered her passion for theater quite young, it was not until she was grown that she was able to pursue it. And now she is pursuing it in every way that she can. Hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Is about self-discovery. In a way, it's about courage. The courage to ask yourself the question, am I all of who I really am? Am I living the life that my innate nature, my innate talent, my given essence would have made possible? Or was there a lesson that I learned from my family of origin, from a teacher in school, from the culture I was raised in, from my siblings or my peers, from my religion, from something I read or heard, from some traumatic event that occurred in my life that told me not to be who I really am? Was there something that happened to me early on in my life that discouraged me from pursuing the things that turned me on? Maybe even something I knew that turned me on at the very beginning of my life. If you've been listening to my interviews, then you know that so many of the people that I interview, people who make their living or their life with an art, knew at two what they were meant to do, what they were drawn to, what they had passion for, what they yearned to be part of. I played the interview with Joyce Valentine, who sat down and played at two what her mother had been teaching a 7-year-old student. This was not negotiable. Joyce knew that the piano was the place for her, virtually from the time she could stand, apparently. And this is not that uncommon. I hear this story a lot from musicians, ironically, people who started playing at 2 or 3 or 4. But I also hear this from fine artists, people who picked up a pencil or a crayon or something and were doing amazing things with it and could not actually be parted from it. I think it was Gail Fulton Ross who tells the story of how her mother had to put her crayons and drawing stuff outside, otherwise she couldn't get Gail to go out. And so it's just not uncommon for people to discover so young, so early in life, what they are drawn to, what they have a passion for, what speaks to them. I think it was Kate Alexander, a brilliant actor, who told me that she remembers sitting on a stage. She had gone to see a performance, and she was on the stage with her feet hanging over the stage, thinking, this is where I want to be. I think she was 7. She didn't really know what acting was, but she knew that she wanted to be there. So, this is not uncommon, and yet, unfortunately, few of us are given the encouragement to follow our natural inclinations. And this doesn't just apply to talents, abilities, skills that we might have been drawn to or attracted to or that spoke to us. This is also true, perhaps even more true, to ways of being. Did you laugh out loud at the kitchen table? Did you laugh so hard at the kitchen table that food spilled out of your mouth or your nose or something? And then were you told in no uncertain terms that that kind of laughing is a bad, bad thing? Leave the table or just don't do it or something? And so did you decide that a certain kind of explosive joy was not for you? That you were not to feel that, express that? Did you get angry or hurt or cry or frightened? And did you hear from a religious person or a teacher that that was not good behavior? You were not to get angry. Anger was the devil's something, or was unattractive, or didn't get you anywhere, or maybe you were even punished for it. Go to your room. Who do you think you are? Don't do that. And of course, this, applies across the board to every kind of behavior, every kind of impulse. Did you want to read all the time? And did someone tell you that that was not okay? I interviewed a writer once who told me that he would write these little stories when he was quite young, 6, 7, 8, and hide them around the house. And that his mother found one of them, and in it he had said some things about a neighbor that weren't true, it was fiction, but they weren't very nice. And his mother was horrified and forbid him to write again. In this particular case, it didn't do any good. This was Stuart Kaminsky, who prolific doesn't begin to describe Stuart's output. And unfortunately, we could have had so much, much, much more from Stuart, but he died much too young. But he did leave us a huge, huge legacy. And if you're not familiar with Stuart Kaminsky's work, especially if you like mystery fiction, run right out to your local library and read Stuart Kaminsky. We hear these things, we get these experiences, things happen to us in our childhood which discourage us from, sometimes just from completely expressing, exploring our passion. But for many, it's not just an interruption. It's a flat-out denial. You will not be like that. You will not do that. That is not okay. I won't love that. So I won't love you if you are like that. And that's, of course, how we interpret it. Or that's dangerous, or it's ugly, or it's evil. And so too many of us are forced, in order to survive our childhoods, in order to be okay in our childhoods, to hide, pretend, deny aspects of ourselves. I'm a psychotherapist, in case you couldn't tell and didn't know because you're listening for the first time. So I am a psychotherapist, and of course this is my bias. My bias is that we have the right to be what we would have been if we had not been discouraged, and that it is never too late to ask the question, was there something I could have been, might have been, should have been? And what was it, and how did I lose it? And it is my belief that we never lose it, that all those things that we are go underground. I call it undercover. We bury them deep inside ourselves, but we don't lose them. We can't amputate parts of ourselves. So they're always there, and they're always waiting. But because they were hidden, as a result of our deciding that they were ugly or dangerous or would cost us something we weren't willing to lose, it's hard to recover them, because the recovery, the attempt to recover, also brings back the taboo, the early learning, the discouragement, the pain, if there's pain attached to it, and usually there is. I'm treating a number of people whose the experiences of their first couple of years were so unpleasant that their ability to feel safe is undercover. Their ability to not be vigilant every minute of the day is undercover. So it is the intention of this show, as well as the intention of all the work I do, to make this point, to say, you may be living a cover story, that's what I call it. That's the version of yourself that was acceptable. It's the truth, but it's not the whole truth. It is likely that you have buried some aspect of yourself, and that your life is poorer because of that. It's obvious. If you can't feel safe, if you have to be worried, watching, and vigilant every minute of the day, how much richer your life would be if you didn't have to do that. But it's also true that if you were a natural artist, that sitting with a blank sheet of paper and a pencil or a crayon or a pen, the hours melted away, and you created something that you could see evolving and that brought you the most delicious joy, and that somehow you lost the permission to do that, you can see how much richer your life would be if you could get that back. So this is the intention of the Lynn Show, to encourage you to ask the question, is there something? And if there is, the chances are you actually even know it. And then to ask the question, am I willing to try to recover it? Because it really does take courage. As I said, when you go after the recovery process, you get back whatever it was that stopped you. So it can be difficult. This is, of course, what psychotherapy is all about. This is, well, one of the things that psychotherapy is meant to do, is help us to be all that we are. So you might want to think about that. You might want to read the article that's up on my website called Psychotherapy on the Go, which talks about what it's like to do psychotherapy on the telephone, which is how I do it these days. And at my website, you can also get the podcasts of all the shows, listen to any of the interviews that I've done before, including the one you're going to hear now. You can get a copy of my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can ask me a question by clicking on Email Me. Just ask me anything you like. You can get me to come and talk to your group or organization. There are lots of things to do on my... Oh, but of course I have to tell you what it is. It is thelynnshow.com. 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 Don't leave the E off of Lynn. And now, as I do every week, I'm going to play an interview. I interview, as I said, people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you hear a person who has done that talking about their connection to their art, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. Today's interview is with Erica Dresick, and as I said in the run-up, Erica is part of the ensemble cast of Mornings at 7, which is going to open shortly at the Manatee Players Theater. Erica was not able to dedicate an entire life to the art with which she fell in love very, very young, and you'll hear her tell her earliest experiences with theater, which are quite charming. But, as she says, her childhood required things of her that kept her from pursuing her interest. However, once she was in a place where she could get an opportunity to work in theater, she ran with it. And the other thing that is so interesting about Erica is that it's as she says, she gets an idea and she goes for it. And this, I believe, is not a common characteristic. So many of us get an idea and then we figure out all kinds of reasons why we shouldn't do it. Not true of Erica Dresick. So I'm sure that you are going to enjoy hearing the way she makes manifest everything that she realizes she wants and needs. Here, Erica Dresick. Okay, I am here with Erica Dresick.
Hi there.
Hi. And I'm interviewing Erica because she is about to be part of the ensemble cast of Mornings at 7, which will be opening at the Manatee Community Theater on September 18th.
Right. That's correct.
Okay, good. So I only ask one question.
Sure.
I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Mm. And it seems clear that you are making your life, some of your life, with the art of acting.
Yes, actually I do a lot of art. I love art. It's been my hobby in my life.
Okay, so other arts as well?
Yes. I do. I'm learning watercolor. I'm an actress, singer, dancer. I have directed, set design. I'm learning ballroom dancing now that I'm retired down here in Florida. Mm-hmm. So I keep pretty busy. Art. I'm very creative. Even my backsplash in my kitchen, I painted it rather than put tile or stone on there. I painted it to look like water flowing and just made up abstract things. So it's just, art is my life.
Yeah, okay. So the question I ask, usually more specifically, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays with you, mm-hmm. Is do you remember the first moment in your life when either drawing or color or performing or acting or dancing?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I came from a poor town in Ferguson, Missouri, which has been in the news lately. It's where I grew up.
Right.
And a very, very, very poor part of town. And we would put the garage door downstairs, and that would be the curtain. And we would do little shows in that little garage area.
Now, who is we?
The neighborhood kids. We're talking 10 years old, 9, 8, somewhere in there.
Okay, so do you remember, well, but if you were already doing that, then there must have been a moment earlier when it occurred to you that this kind of thing would be fun. Or it wasn't, just somebody knocked on the door and said, want to be in a play?
Oh, no, it wasn't even that at all. Like, I would go to the library and read books, get plays from the... It wasn't
at 10?
Very young. It was just something. I loved to sing in front of people. You know how little girls
do that. So
do
you remember
that.
The first time you sang in front
no.
of people?
No.
Do you remember any
no.
of those early
events? No, I just remember gathering the family in the living room, and I would sing a song, and then later encouraged neighbor kids, and then we did like a song and dance, and played, you know, spanking our gang kind of thing. And it really didn't, again, as I was poor, I didn't get to do many, here's the key, I didn't get to do many things as a child. I had to take care of my brothers and sisters. Long story there, but no need to get into that. So I really didn't get to have a childhood.
Yes.
So I had, those are my early memories, and then I didn't get to do anything until, actually, I married, and...
So, school, nothing, no training,
no
lessons,
nothing.
Wow, okay.
No training at all.
Work.
All work.
All work. Right.
And then I did go overseas. I got married, and we went overseas.
Oh, so you got married, and you went overseas because...
His job, but that's where we started a little theater group. I lived in Saudi Arabia, and we started a little theater group, got some plays in. It wasn't where you auditioned, it was where you play this part, you play that part. Who is we? The other women, other people on the compound that we were, where we were.
So
I was actually in my 40s.
Holy cow!
Before I started into all of this. And I've been like reclaiming my youth, my childhood,
yourself.
Ever since. Yeah, and I'll probably be this way till the day I die.
Well, okay, so let's back up a little bit. This is what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
What it sounds like is that quite early in your life, you understood that this was a part of you, that this was attractive to you, that you, mm-hmm. that performing, that entertaining, that expressing yourself in this way was...
It was a joy.
It was a joy, exactly,
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah.
But life made it impossible for you to do that.
Correct.
So you get married, your husband has a job overseas in which you are in a compound of other people who also have this...
In Saudi Arabia, you lived in compounds.
So is that because you lived in the compound that his job provided, or that's where all expats lived, or...
That's where his job provided.
Okay. So there would be other people whose husbands or wives were also
mm-hmm.
working for this,
mm-hmm.
and that would be your community,
essentially. It was our community. We actually became family.
Yes, I'm
and
sure.
And there isn't much to do. We had lots of sports and things to do like that. But this was time where I had time. I wasn't working, and I had
right.
time and was able to start this, plant the seed and start the idea.
So you said to some of the other women, why don't we do this?
Yeah.
And they also had the same inclination.
Well, I kind of talked them into it. And I started off with children's programs, and then it was like, why not adults? And actually, after 2 years, we even, towards the end, before I left, we even had like dinner theaters.
Really?
Yeah, that we would have the cafeteria there, bring in the food, and we did our little, we had a little stage and all that, so it yeah.
So what kind of stuff did you do?
Just plays. I mean, we weren't
straight
music,
plays.
Just straight plays. We weren't musically inclined. And
right,
we,
right.
We didn't have musicians and that sort of thing, so we just
so,
did plays.
So straight, serious comedy? You do care?
Oh, we did comedy. Wasn't lending me a time. Couldn't even tell you the names of them right now.
No, but it was, you thought to yourself, oh yes, this is good. Oh yes, I like this, like that, or you
no,
didn't
just,
even think
it,
that?
No, for me, with my art and creative, I don't plan or think anything. I get a vision,
and then
I
go
see
for
it,
it,
and
right.
then I go for it.
Okay, all right, okay.
I decide to go for it or not go for it.
Right. So, okay, so you're in Saudi Arabia mm-hmm. for 2 years, is that what you said?
Three and a half.
Okay, yeah.
And then I came back to the States, and we were in Maryland at Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, and they have a theater group there,
mm-hmm.
and they're called the Music and Drama Group, short for MAD, and I did shows with them. I started out as tech, and then got my first lead, and then I performed with them, I would say I was there almost 25 years.
So okay. You're there for 25 years, you start out With tech?
I started out with tech. Actually, my husband got a small role, and so I came in and did tech.
And so he was also interested in theater, sort of as a...
Just right. Got talked into it.
Yeah.
And then I got involved and just blossomed.
Yeah.
And so that's where I learned tap dancing.
You learned there?
Well, they would put on shows, mostly musicals.
Right.
And do theater, so or do acting, or plays, I should say. And so whatever the choreography was, I learned it. So I learned tap and jazz and a little ballet and no formal training.
No.
And I actually, and then I also got motivated and I went to the Studio Theater Conservatory of Acting in Washington, D.C. and took acting classes.
So you did study
for years. So I did study after, the real reason was behind it was because I didn't get a role in a musical. And so in my feeling of being left out and upset that I wouldn't be a part of something, I knew someone that had taken class, so I signed up.
See, this is sort of, in order to do this, to fill up that time with it, because you didn't get to do this over here?
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
I took classes.
Yeah, right, it's great. So how were the classes?
The classes were great. Joy Zinnemann is a very well-known name in D.C., and she was very hard on me, but I learned a lot. And I even got to be on stage in small, tiny, tiny roles and understudied some lead roles.
Wait. Hard on you.
Hard on you. As a teacher, these classes are different than like going to college, let's say, mm-hmm. and you take a class and you're graded.
Right.
These were steps that they were teaching that if you didn't learn the concepts in this class and you weren't able to move on, they would keep you back.
Oh my!
And so it wasn't one of those classes where, oh, you're doing a great job. It was more like, no, you're not getting this. Let's try this and see if you can understand.
Wow!
This way, you know, like we want you to be angry, so they'd wrap somebody up in a coat, for instance. I mean, this was one tiny incident.
Right.
That's the one I remember because it was pretty dramatic. It was
dramatic,
and we were like, you know, we all kind of like played with this person until they got angry. You know, but it made him suddenly understand.
Right.
And those are the
viscerally.
Things, yes. And these are the things you have to learn as an actor is to learn how to touch those points. I mean, it took me probably 3 years to learn how to cry, for instance.
Wow.
And then, because of myself, I just learned to pick a certain spot in my body and focus on it, and then the tears would come out.
Right.
Not for everybody. That would be different.
No, I understand. And, well, what I'm thinking is that for someone, you didn't describe your childhood very much, but you did describe it as a time when a lot was expected of you,
yes.
And you were not able to indulge yourself very much. And
no.
Such a person, I'm making this up, but I imagine such a person would not easily go to tears, because there wasn't really space for that or time, room. And I would think that the taboos against that would be really strong, so it would be a real challenge for you to become vulnerable enough to do that. I mean,
that could be. I never thought of putting it that way.
Well, you know, this is just what it seems to me is, and you know, we don't have to have this conversation if you don't want to.
No, I'm fine with it. I'm an open book.
Some of the actor training probably helped with that.
Maybe, yes.
Because if you have, I mean, I'm the oldest child also, so so I know something about what it requires of you. And so if it requires of you not to indulge yourself, then you build up walls against that so you're not in danger of doing that.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to say is that you got to that at all is, it seems to me, a statement of your real motivation, your real desire to do this, and your openness. That's a big thing to overcome, it seems to me. You know, you said it kind of casually, it took me 3 years to get cry, but I think that must have been a very big deal.
It was a big deal for me.
I still,
otherwise I wouldn't have said it.
Yeah, no.
Look, I can do that. I can be vulnerable express that, and which is what I love about acting. I love the vulnerability that you can go, but it's not you. It's somebody else. So it's somebody else's words, and I love building the character. And so to be out there and be that person, to forget the audience and focus on where you are in that moment is an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
It's very satisfying, and in some ways it's very soothing, And once you reach that challenge, you reach it, then your satisfaction is very high.
Yeah. Okay, so step one is getting in touch with these feelings and being able to manifest them, right? Mm-hmm. So what are the other steps in the...
Oh, in learning?
Yeah, in these classes.
In the classes? Oh, my goodness. They start out teaching you the basics, and then they teach you how to build a character. Actually, the second class is dealing with your emotions. But we also did Shakespeare and comedy and mm-hmm. Greek. Mm-hmm. And grave gentlemen of Argolis assembled here. Someday I'd love to go to Greece and do that monologue. So, I've always pictured it. So to experience all the different types. And then I'm back. And I did think about professional, but I had a great job at NASA working at Goddard Space Flight Center. And there was just no way I would give up that salary and then go full-time. Being a full-time actor is a tremendous, I don't know the other way to put it, it sucks up your life.
Yeah.
You don't have time to do anything else. And you don't get paid much. It's very, very low pay.
No.
So I made the decision to stay with community theater mm-hmm. just for that reason. I'd rather enjoy myself than be out. And I was
struggling.
I wasn't like a 20-year-old. Yeah, I was in my 40s, 50s. You know, so that idea of doing that was like, no, I'm not going there.
Okay, so as long as you were there at NASA, mm-hmm. You continued to work in in MAD as much as you could. Is that
oh, yeah.
Right?
Almost,
right.
Yeah. I almost every year I was in something. They did two shows a year, mm-hmm. three. They had a music in the fall, a music show, and in February they would do a play. Some kind of play, and then before the play, they had a cabaret mm-hmm. performance. So I got to perform in the cabaret sometimes, which was fun. And then in June, they had I call it a song and dance show where anybody could come in, sort of I call it the garden variety show. Mm-hmm. So there'd be a theme, and then you'd try to fit the songs and dances or whatever people brought in. You didn't audition; you just came in
whatever it was.
And because it was a Goddard club. Basically, mm-hmm. it was like, you came in with something, you were
you
in,
do it.
You did
right.
the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you sing and you learn to dance, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
I was a triple threat at one time.
Yes.
In community theater.
Huh? Right, yeah.
Well, too old for that now, but.
Well, I don't know. I mean, so are you saying that you wouldn't audition for a musical?
No, I'd still audition for, I haven't yet since I've been down here in Florida, but, yeah, I probably would somewhere along the line.
Sure.
But my life has changed a little bit. I moved down here because my mom retired and came here. My mother had cancer. So she did very, very well, and we now live together. So I have the little
more responsibility again.
I have a different responsibility.
Yeah, right.
When I live, when I'm single, so I live by myself, and I could do whatever I wanted when I wanted, and doing plays and theater was perfect. But it's a little more difficult now at this stage in my life. I find it to be a little more taxing.
So, did you come here from NASA, or was there an interim?
No, I came here from NASA.
Okay.
Florida's great. I've been looking where to retire. I was, four more years, so I would be facing that. And so I had started to look for a place to live. And I looked at Delaware and Virginia, and I knew I couldn't live in D.C. It was just too expensive. Maryland was borderline. And I came down here to a new area called Lakewood Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
That's a new city that's mm-hmm. being built. And my mom wasn't happy where she was. She was living like in a residential area with a lot of children and families.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, Mom, let's find you a 55 plus. And we started looking and we found this development that we're in. And I fell in love with it. So it was perfectly what I was looking for to retire. And so we started looking at the money, and it was like, hey, you know what? If you sell your house and I sell my house, we could buy this house, and I could retire early.
Right.
So
wow.
In 7 weeks, I retired, left my job, packed up my house, and moved down here.
Oh, my God.
And took care of my mom through all of her treatment. And then about 8 months later, we moved into the new house that we live in now.
Well, you're not kidding when you say, if I get an idea, I just do it.
I just do it, yeah. Well, and she was sick, and
I needed
to be here. So
right.
Financially, it worked out wonderful for both of us, and
right.
I got to retire.
And?
And I'm getting back into theater. I mean, yeah. I've been here a year and a half, and this will be my second full show. I did one little show with the Players in Sarasota, but it was this group over 50s that would just, same thing like the Garden Variety show, yeah. I mean, that kind of concept. So I came in on that and did that, but this is like my first real big play here.
Wow.
Lots of lines.
Yeah.
All I can say.
Yeah. Okay, so talk to me a little bit about it. This is Mornings at 7.
Mornings at 7.
Which was it on Broadway.
And a delightful play.
Tell me about it.
Well, it's a 1930s play, like 1938. And it's basically about these four sisters and who they're married to. And, you know, it's kind of a mixture. I think someone said something as we were rehearsing that this Paula Osborne, we wrote it, just about covered everything that can go wrong in a family. That's it's a typical family, and they're all in 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the relationship between all of them. And I play Esther, who's the eldest and a mediator. And I don't know if you want to go into all of the characters, but
yeah,
they're all colorful.
Mm-hmm.
You have Carl that I even said to the director one time, I said, almost today it'd be like he had a slight autism. You know, he's mm-hmm. kind of like, has trouble dealing with people, and he kind of goes his own way. And then you have Ari, who's been living with one of her sisters her entire life. And so there's questionable about her relationship with the sister's husband.
Mm-hmm.
Who's not very bright sometimes, and he's got two women catering after him. And then you've got my husband, David, who's decided he's a professor, and he doesn't want me to visit with my family because he says they're all ignorant, which comes up in the play. So, but I do it anyway, and I get caught this time, and he's putting these demands on me that, you know, if I'm going to do this, then I'm going to have to live on the second floor the rest of my life.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yes.
And the bathroom's up there, which is why he let me have the upstairs. So, the bathroom. Can't say that too loud. So, you know, just wonderful, wonderful characters.
Right. Interacting in the way that families do.
And we just moved in last night to the new set. It's not finished, so that's part of what happens in theater. You rehearse somewhere else, and then just a few weeks before you get to move onto the stage, but it's not always completed.
Right.
So you're kind of having to redo the blocking. The director does. She redoes the block. And our director's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
She is the sweetest lady, and she keeps everyone very up, and no one works very hard that we don't feel overwhelmed, and she's very conscious of all this. So
yeah, this is Pam Wiley.
Pam Wiley, and she's done a fabulous job. I like working with her a
mm-hmm.
lot. So we're in that where Pam now has to, the director has to kind of redo her blocking. It doesn't quite work like
not
it did
stage, right?
When we were working with, you know, folding chairs and things like that.
Well, and how I see it is, and when you have blocking, quite often the dialogue gets attached to the blocking. So when they change the blocking, it can quite often be difficult to... Your brain doesn't really want to accept the new moving around or put these words somewhere else. So and you have to do it over and over again because now you're at the theater, but maybe as they put more stuff in, it'll also not work with whatever it was originally. Yeah, right.
That's
so it's
correct.
A real challenge. It's
yes.
a real challenge.
And Pam said that as we went into it. She goes, I know it's going to be a rough night because, I mean, you're standing one way in the room you're rehearsing in, and then suddenly you're on a stage, and you just feel like you're backwards and
yeah.
things like that. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's very hard for some actors to deal with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, it will probably have been a week ago or 2 weeks ago when I run this.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed Jeffrey Kinn, who's the artistic director at the Players.
Okay.
And he's going to be in, he's probably already been in by the time I air this, Lend Me a Tenor, which they did once before, and all the same people, or many of the same people, are in it.
I wanted to audition for that, because I have done that play.
Ah, well, what he told me is they have a different director this time. And they keep running into this, oh, no, I don't sit on this side. I sit on that side. Oh, no, you know.
That would be difficult to
uh-huh.
do.
Yeah, yeah.
Very difficult.
Right, because they did the whole show before with the blocking that they did it, and their bodies remember.
It's like trying to say, use your left hand when you're right-handed.
Right, that's exactly right. That's exactly
very
right.
Very difficult.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, so how is this feeling to you? Are you enjoying it?
I have to say, for me, I didn't really audition for this initially. They were short one woman. And so I heard through the grapevine, and I met with Pam, and she said, she gave me some sides to read. And she said, that's great, you know, you'd be great as Esther. And then she kind of apologized. She was like, oh, well, this is the only role I can give you, and blah, blah, blah. Now, right. I had previously done Our Town last year at Manatee, so I had six lines last year. So I figured, oh, okay, this will be another where I got six lines. Uh-huh. And I went ahead and ordered the script. And then I sat, when it arrived, and I sat down with my little yellow marker pen, and all you heard was like, oh, no. Oh no!
Look at this
full of lines. This is the most lines I think I've ever had to memorize. So it's, for me, it's been very stressful.
Yes.
We in Maryland, where I'm from, we do it different. It's usually an 8-week rehearsal, 4 days a week, and here they do a 6-week, 5 days a week. It's the same time, but
right.
It feels like
it's collapsed.
It's
right.
Much more collapsed. So
right.
2 weeks ago, I was pretty. Let's just
anxious.
Say I was not fun to be around.
Yeah.
I was, I'm like, don't talk to me. I have to study these lines.
Yes, sir.
And then the more you study, the more your head hurts. You get brain burn. I call it brain burn.
Right,
your brain
right.
actually hurts. And you can only do so much.
No, that's it. You can only ask your brain to accept so much.
Perfect. That's
yeah.
the way to put it.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So,
so I'm getting better now. Last night, I'm like, okay, I think I'm going to be able to do this.
Oh, God. You know, I know this one, so I'm really, I have great... empathy for this, and of course the dilemma is that you love the thing so much on the one hand, and then on the other hand it's hard.
And like I said, I live with my mom, and people who are not in theater don't really understand.
No, they really don't.
What's required. I mean, they're accepting of famous movie stars or Dancing with the Stars. Derek was on this morning, and mm-hmm. he was like, oh yeah, you know, I do this all day long. And my mom looked at me, she said, does he have a private life? And I said, probably not.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and I said, and I'm, but in my back of my mind, I'm going, well, that's the same thing for
that's
me,
right.
even though I'm at a lower level. It's the
but
same
it's saying
thing.
It takes the same amount of concentration and focus.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. And I do think it's difficult for other people to make allowances for it.
Yes.
You know, and especially in situations where you've been catering to someone, if you are less available, they may not understand why you are suddenly less available.
Well, I mean, that kind of goes along with it, but I don't think that's it as much as it is not having been with me when I did theater, not
right.
understanding the requirement of
right,
it.
Right, right.
And some of the, you know, I have a new guy in my life, and he's being very patient, but he's also not in theaters. He's like, I can't, you know. How much time do you have to spend on this?
Yeah.
And I finally have to say, it's like having a full-time job.
That's right.
You need to spend like 8 hours a day.
That's right.
I mean, rehearsals are 4 hours alone.
Right.
You know, but, well, by the time you drive there and you do your rehearsal and you go home and you get home late and then you got to study and then you go back to rehearsal
that's
again.
That's right.
So it's a full-time job.
It is, and you have to, it's not, and you have to get it as right as you can.
Oh, yeah.
It's not, there's no flexibility in here. I mean, you know, you have the lines or you don't have the lines.
Well, first thing that comes to my mind is the image. If you're on stage, you don't have your lines, you might as well be standing there naked.
That's right.
When you didn't plan to be.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And that's how it feels when you don't get it. You know, you were 100% exposed and vulnerable if you don't have it. The lines cover everything up. It's not you, but if you miss your line,
it's just you. That's right.
Yes.
Well, I've
yes.
never heard anybody say anything quite like that, and I think it's quite right.
Okay.
I think it's exactly right. When did you start to be interested in art? I mean, the fine art, drawing, painting.
It's funny. I traveled a lot when I was married, and I did not have a college degree. So when we came back, we were living in Saudi Arabia, as I said, and I got a job, and I right across from my, I was more like the secretary admin type, and across the hall from me was a TV studio. And light bulb went off, like I said, I don't plan this, so I decided that's what I want to be. So, but in that process of going back to college, or going to college, you have to take extracurricular classes, right? And so I took drawing, and I thought, I can't draw, you know. I was 50 at this time, I've never been able to draw in my life. But if you take lessons and they teach you how to draw, it just opened up another world for me. So,
Now, are you saying you went back to college when you were 50?
40 to 50, I was in college, from age 40 to 50.
Because you saw this thing you thought you might like to do?
Yep. And I mean, that's how I wound up working in multimedia. I actually was one of the first women camera operators carrying those big old, heavy beta cameras around. And I was like, you know, this skinny little
thing. Yes, you're this little thing.
Oh, I was even tiny.
Well, wait. What did you major in?
At the time, it was radio, television, and film. But they don't have that anymore. And I had a minor in, what's reporting?
Journalism.
Yeah. I never did graduate either. That's another funny story, because that's when I took the acting classes. I had one more class to go in college to get my degree after 10 years with kids and a job and all that. And I blew it off because I got into the acting classes and I loved it and I wanted to spend my money there. So I am actually truly one class short of a BA, and I've never regretted it.
No, because you got to do the work anyway.
I'm doing the
work. That was the point.
It wouldn't have changed my job.
No.
It wouldn't change my salary. It wouldn't have changed anything.
So. No. So you had the best of all possible worlds.
Yeah.
Because you were able to say, this is what I want.
Yep.
This is what I want.
And people today even go, but you should go back. And I'm like, why?
What for?
Why don't I waste my time on that now? You know, I did what I wanted to do, and I'm glad I did it.
Well, you know, this is an interesting thing. The difference between the idea that there is a right way and a wrong way and something that is the right way, like one should graduate from college because that is somehow right. So there's that over there. And then over here, there is who I am and what works for me and what is congruent for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so much of the world is over here. With the, you should do this because this is the right thing. And mm-hmm. Never mind that it doesn't work, it's not right for you.
Right.
But there's a right out there in neon, right?
Yes.
And I do think that too many people believe in the neon, this is the right. And as a result, don't pay attention to what is speaking inside of them, which is what you clearly did.
Well, and to add to that, someone going to college is much younger. We're talking about an older woman who's got enough experience and confidence in herself to be able to say, no, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So I'd like to take that into consideration, too. It's not just one or the other, but my age helped with that decision.
Well, I think you had this pretty much all your life.
Yes.
I don't really think for you it was a function of age.
But I didn't know that. I didn't realize that. I have not realized how creative I was until the last maybe, the longest in 10 years, probably more like 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I constantly have people going, you're so creative. And I'm like, well, I don't really think about it. I just get a flash, an image, and then I'm like, oh, okay, we'll do that.
Yeah, well, but the fact that you didn't know it about yourself doesn't mean it wasn't true.
True.
You know. And really, even the stuff you were describing about your early childhood, I decided I wanted to put on a play, so I told these people they should come and put on this play with me.
And I convinced them.
That's right, exactly. And then, you know, you wind up in Saudi Arabia with all these people who are there, but they don't, you know, and you say, well, I think this is what we should be doing. And I think this is a quality of yours, which you may or may not have been aware of. I don't think it came with your age. I really think this is...
I'm a starter. I'm a doer and a starter.
Yeah.
And I have lots of ideas still that I'd like to do. I'll share one with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so since I live in Lakewood Ranch, which is a new city,
right. My
dream, and I'm talking to the people in my new development, that maybe we'll start a reading group and start, but I think Lakewood Ranch needs their own theater.
Oh, my God.
And that's my, you're not supposed to tell these things, though, but that's my fantasy for where I'm at now. I would love to, I need to find some, I'm not good with talking to politicians and selling. I'm not a seller in that respect. So I'm going to work on this and try to find the right person that can try to sell these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they need their own. We're going to have a whole city there. They are going to have a library now. That's official. So that's the first step to art.
It's lovely. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
And if you're listening and you think you can help with this, you can go to my website. I'm going to give my website later, and I will connect you to Erica.
Great.
Yeah. You never know, right?
You never know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other question I ask is, and this is going to take, I think, some reflection, thinking about all of the ways in which you got involved in art,
mm-hmm.
Is there anything you would say about what that's like to have that urge to art in your life?
Oh. To me, it's the way it should be for everyone. It's like looking out your window and enjoying a beautiful sunny day. It's the same kind of feeling. A lot of it is putting yourself into it, though, which is a risk. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a low risk. It's not a high risk. Even if you draw, simple. If you have a blank canvas and I'm taking lessons, draw something and you're like, okay, well, you get an idea in your head and you start putting on paper. It could be the lousiest thing you've ever done. Or you probably will think it's the lousiest thing you've ever done, and somebody else will think it's great. Mm-hmm. So, but just the process, it's like meditating. Mm-hmm. It's very much like meditating. And when you're done with something, there's, again, that, I mentioned this earlier, that sort of, I don't know, like a nice, beautiful day on the beach, and you're relaxed and, you know, well-fed and suntanned a little bit, very content.
Content, right. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
That's a great place to stop. Thank you so
you're
much,
very
Erica.
Welcome. This was fun.
As I always say, I play interviews with people who make their living or their life with an art so that you can hear what it sounds like when someone is congruent. That's the psychological term for what you see is what you get, or got, or what's there. And when you listen to someone like Erica, you can hear that so clearly. She was not able always to pursue what she was, what she needed, the thing that she was drawn to. But when she was able to, virtually nothing stopped her. She would coerce others into participating with her. And as you can hear at the tail end, she's getting ready to do that again, to try and make her dream of a theater at Lakewood Ranch happen. And my money's on Erica. When she was in a position to talk people into putting on a play, that's what she did. When she realized that perhaps she needed additional training, she went for it. And even though it was difficult, and painful even, she stayed right with it because it was what she knew she wanted. And then, as she saw another opportunity, she had no qualms about not doing what other people think one must do, completing your degree. She ran right for the thing that spoke to her. So, of course, it is my hope that as you've been listening to Erica, you've been asking yourself, what are those things that sparked my interest? What are those things that were a dream of mine? What are those things that occurred to me that would be fun to do, interesting to do? What are those things that when I saw other people doing them, I thought, gee, I'd like to do that or try that or be that? And did you? Are you? Have you? And if not, do you know why not? Do you remember what you told yourself, how you stopped yourself? Do you remember what you used as a reason not to do, to be, to have those things which were so clearly attractive to you? As you heard, Erica is no longer a young woman. But that is not stopping her from pursuing her passion for being in plays, for drawing, painting, watercoloring, and pursuing the dreams that grow in her mind. It really isn't too late. So if there is something that you thought you wanted to do, or maybe, as I said in the beginning of the show, there's a quality which you want, maybe even need, in your life today, but which you learned quite early you should not demonstrate, this too, it's not too late to recover. So again, I'm a little repetitious in this show, but I think this is important to remember. It's not too late. It's possible to recover. And recovery is not as simple as, oh yes, I wanted to be an actor, so here I go, getting on stage, or, oh yes, I realized that I was discouraged from standing up for myself, so watch me, I'm going to stand up for myself. This is actually a hobby horse of mine. There are so many books out there now saying, you know, you can do it, just do it. I actually don't believe that. I believe that if you have a reason from your childhood not to do it, then when you try to do it, that reason will rise up and discourage you. That doesn't mean it's impossible. It just means that you have to deal with that reason. And of course, as I always say, that is the job of psychotherapy. So if you have thought of something you'd like to recover, if you think you'd like to try and recover it, find a therapist. If you want to talk to me about what that's like, go up to my website, thelynnshow.com, and ask me any questions you like, and I'll be happy to answer you. I would love to hear from you. So, as always, I hope there was something you heard in this show that you can use. Something, as I keep saying, that inspired you, or something that amused you, something that tickled you, something that will bring you back, because I will be here next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. Singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as